Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Central Asia Metals full year results. My name is Emilia, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. For the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the conference. To do this, you can press star one at any time to register your question. If at any point you require assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you'll be connected to an operator. I am now handing over to your host, Nick Clark, Nigel Robinson, Gavin Ferrar, and Louis Rothall to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for those in the room, ladies and gentlemen, and to those on the call. It's my pleasure to announce what is now the seventh announcement of our results and annual dividend to the company. And for those following, is our standard disclaimer. And I think the results pretty much stand out and speak for themselves. Obviously, the major thing that happened last year to the company is the acquisition of Lynx Resources, the Sasa mine in Macedonia. Now, whilst we only had 2 months of economic benefit in November and December, you can see that we've had quite a successful year in terms of gross revenue. That's up 60%+ to $106.5 million. And that breaks down as to 86 for Kounrad and something like 20 million for Sasa. Bear in mind, it was only 2 months of the year in which we had benefit. How is this achieved? I mean, Sasa was a $402 million transaction, but of course the engine of CAML and has been over the years has been Kounrad. We produced 14,100 tons. It was the best year we've had. And of course, on the back of a appreciating copper price, that gave us a huge uplift in our overall gross revenue for Kounrad. But it's that success at Kounrad which has enabled us to actually do the transaction with Sasa. $402 million was a chunky price to pay, and we achieved that by an equity raise and by some new debt and by some consideration shares. But the equity raise that we did last year with our brokers here and JP Morgan and others was the third largest equity raise, mining equity raise, after EN Plus and Polyus, and we were the third largest raise. So it showed the market is there for a company such as ours, which looks to own and operate business in the base metals market, and how do we do it? Okay, we've got operations at Sasa. Last 2 months of last year gave us 3,600 tons of zinc and nearly 5,000 tons of lead. Our adjusted EBITDA, that's allowing, adding back in the transaction costs, was up 60% on last year to 66.4. Again, the margin has increased, the EBITDA margin from 58% last year to 62. We have taken on debt for this transaction. Our net debt at the end of last year was about $139 million. So this first quarter of this year shows how are we doing. Well, okay, we've produced from Kounrad over 3,100 tons of copper, slightly down on last year at the same time, but that's mainly due to we've had a very cold winter. I think we had 1 week in February where we had average of minus 35 degrees for the whole week. But so that is a testament to the operation, its resilience, that it still came out with over 3,000 tons of copper. And we're still on target for our 13,000 to 14,000 tons for the year. Zinc at 5,500 and lead at just over 7,000 tons. So the first quarter of this year, we're looking very much at maintaining our guidance for the year. And, of course, what all of this leads to is the dividend for the full year is 16.5p, and that includes the proposed 10p dividend that will be put up for approval at the shareholders' meeting of the AGM. How does that translate into share price? Well, you can see on the left-hand graph against the copper price, our share price is now £3.25 or thereabouts, and with the shares on issue, we're looking at a market capitalization of the company about £570 million. That's about $800 million. And you can see the quality from our shareholder register, we've still got the same shareholders that we had prior to our transaction. In fact, many of them followed their money in with new money when we readmitted last year in November. So we've got Fidelity, Hargreaves Hale, BlackRock, Hamro, who came in at the equity raise last year. They hadn't previously been shareholders of ours. Majedi. So you can see that we have a strong shareholder register that likes, obviously, what the management does. And interestingly, on the graph on the right-hand side, this is a graph of our share price since IPO against the AIM Basic Resources, which you can see has been pretty much an underperformer over the years. And you can see what our share price has done. Interestingly, we raised the money at this point last year. £2.30 was the equity price that we raised, the $153 million that we needed for the transaction. And we're currently trading at about £3.25. And in fact, since Christmas, we've hit a high of £3.39, I think. So look, the company's done well. And obviously, the management team behind it have worked extremely hard, Nigel and Gavin, and we'll talk more about that later on. But at this point, I'll hand over to Nigel, who will take you through the financial aspects.
Morning, ladies. Morning, gentlemen. Before I touch on some of the specifics on the numbers, let me just talk about two of the key drivers that have, you know, influenced those numbers in many ways. Obviously, market conditions, which we can do very little about. In all the three metals that we now operate in, copper, zinc and lead, there was an average increase of about 28% over the course of the year, from 26% on the lead price through to a copper price increase of 30%, which is all really positive, obviously, to the bottom line and our revenue figures. Looking further ahead in terms of 2018, we're confident as a management team from all the reports we get in both copper price. I know there's wage negotiations in South America, some of which are being resolved, and therefore the disruptions are maybe not going to be quite as severe as expected. But I think, on the whole, the market's fairly balanced in copper, and therefore the numbers that we need in terms of the prices should be around the kind of consensus price of 6,800, which is positive. In terms of zinc and lead, a little bit more bullish in the short term, I think, because of the deficits within the market. We're fairly confident over the next 12 to 18 months, should I say, of good fat market conditions for zinc and lead prices, which is positive as we aim to deleverage the balance sheet. Against that, obviously, we've got geopolitical tensions in terms of the demand, which you all know about. We can't predict what that might be. But I think on the whole, looking forward, the metal prices were reasonably bullish about both zinc and lead and copper. On the other side of the equation, market conditions, we did experience over the course of last year some slight strengthening in two of the major currencies that we operate in. The tenge, probably about 5% over the course of the year, really strengthened. And our cost base in Kazakhstan is 60 to 70% based in local currencies, the tenge. And in Macedonia, it's a similar kind of percentage, about 70% of the cost base in Macedonia is in the Macedonian dinar. And obviously that's linked into the euro, and the euro strengthened against the dollar. So that's a slightly adverse impact, which we need to manage over the course of the coming year, etc. And then finally, inflation. Headline figures of around about 7% in Kazakhstan and Macedonia, 1.4%. But I think on the ground, we're experiencing slightly higher headwinds, if you like, in terms of inflationary pressures on some of those things, price of electricity, some of the wage prices. But overall, given the strong metal prices, you know, the market conditions are favourable for a good year moving forward, as well as what influenced our numbers that I'll talk about in a minute from 2017. The other thing that drove the numbers, obviously, is, as Nick mentioned, the acquisition of Lynx Resources towards the latter end of the year. We completed on November the 6th, and most people are familiar now with the $402.5 million that we paid for the actual purchase of the Saturn mine, effectively. Just to refresh people's memories, combination there of $120 million of new debt through Traxys and a couple of banks. We inherited $67 million of debt from the Sasa facility itself, the Sasa mining shell, should I say, and raised $153.5 million in September of last year, 49.1 million shares at a price of £2.30. And then the other two aspects, $12 million of the consideration was deferred. That'll start being paid off in November of this year through to 2019. And also $50 million of shares that were given over to Orion as consideration for the acquisition as well. A couple of things which people aren't less aware of, which happened subsequent to completing the acquisition, is these smallish numbers down here. What we did have was an exercise on net working capital, which we completed only recently, actually, and agreed that Orion repay us $3.3 million for a balancing off of inventories, working capital and net debt. And we received that money yesterday into the bank. That's $3.3 million of a reduction in that $402.5 million headline number. On the other side of the equation, as Nick said before, we effectively owned the mine from the end of October. So we had 2 months of results from the Sasa mine that feed into the numbers I'm going to talk about in a minute. However, there was a month whereby we had economic ownership of the mine, but we couldn't consolidate it into our numbers because of the rules of IFRS and business combinations. We didn't actually legally have control of the mine. However, we did benefit to the tune of, we paid out interest on the equity of $3 million. If you look at the numbers that were announced today, you'll see there's a net cash that we acquired on the end of October, about $8.5 million. So in round terms, we benefited during that month about $5.5 million worth of cash. It's not in the revenues or the EBITDAs, but it's actually in the cash numbers that we acquire, which reduces effectively the purchase price, you could argue. And then we actually hedged the currency. When we raised the money in September, we didn't pay it over until November, and we actually hedged, and we actually made a gain on that hedge. Sorry, that element there is not that hedge, apologies. That's the fair value acquisition of this $50 million, which you have to account for at the actual day you complete. And there was a change in exchange rates and the share price, so that's the $1.1 million. So effectively, the purchase price comes down slightly to about $401.1. Nothing material, but I thought it's probably worth mentioning that. But this does influence our results, obviously, in the course of these numbers here. Nick's mentioned the headline numbers, all good numbers, positives across the board. Revenue increasing by 54% up to north of $100 million, 106.5, of which 86.5 was Kounrad, or 86.4 should I say, and 20 million, 20.1 was from Sasa. And that's just in 2 months operation at Sasa. So November and December of Sasa contributed $20.1 million of revenue and a $14.5 million of the EBITDA numbers there. On the EBITDA numbers themselves, you can see the actual EBITDA was $53.8 million, an increase of 35% year-on-year. But an adjusted number, so allowing for $12.6 million of acquisition costs that we incurred throughout the course of the year, the ongoing number is $66.4 million, and that's a 66% increase. And you can see the healthy margins that we've got there, and also an increase on earnings per share. So all in all, a good set of numbers on the income side. Healthy revenues from Kounrad, increased price of copper, and also 2 month contribution from Sasa, I think, are the headline points to make on this. And just one final point, offtake agreements. We did sign with Traxys to sell all the product from Sasa, and we sell 90% of our product from Kounrad through Traxys on a marketing arrangement through to various smelters in Europe for the Sasa product. And that was signed and started from the 1st of January of this year. Moving on, the balance sheet. It's not something we often talk about in CAML presentations. Very conservative balance sheet, always had a conservative balance sheet, never had any debt. And even though now we've taken on a net debt of $138.9 million, if you look at the asset base, in terms of a gearing kind of number, it's still well below 30%, and it's still a comfortable number, as we said at the time of the acquisition, an amount of debt that we're comfortable with, both in terms of paying it off in a four-year period with accelerated payments on cash sweeps. And also, if you look at it on a net debt to EBITDA ratio, towards the end of this year, we expect to get that somewhere close to one, which in most businesses is certainly acceptable and not seen as imprudent in any shape or form. Just a couple of points I want to raise on this so nobody's alarmed. Other liabilities, looks quite high there, $50 million from $6.4 million. That's not indicating we've got short-term cash problems in any way. Of that $50.3 million on the other liabilities, $20 million of that is what's deferred revenue from the silver stream that was sold off by the previous owners of the mine. That's a credit in the balance sheet, and it gets amortized over the life of mine and returned back to the P&L. We effectively only earn $5 per ounce in cash terms on the silver that we sell through the lead concentrate. And another $12 million in that $50 is the deferred consideration I mentioned before as part of the acquisition price. So that's $32 million of that $50 is what you generally class as a liability that's suppressing demand on the cash of the business. So a lot less. About $8 million of that is tax, and about $10 million is suppliers and trade payables. Likewise, other assets increases quite a lot. More inventory. We've actually put Copper Bay as an asset for disposal. That is within that number of about $4.5 million. And also, we've now got more on trade payables. Just operating Kounrad, we never really had any debtors at the year end because we always made sure that we received the cash prior to actual year end. So we never had debtors. But now we have about $6 or $7 million of cash has already been received in the last quarter on that. So in terms of working capital and current assets and liabilities, still a healthy balance sheet. And overall, in terms of long-term assets and liabilities, healthy and manageable level of borrowings. Cash flow, just a little bit on there. I won't labour the point on this. Basically two halves to this chart, effectively. You've got the operating side here, generating $60.4 million, paying it out as we have done in terms of taxes, in terms of dividends to shareholders, and in terms of capex back into the business to develop the business. A healthy starting balance of $40 million and ending with $45.8 million. And then this part of it is simply really a cash flow diagrammatic explanation of how we purchased the Sasa mine, effectively, where the money went. So we raised money through equity, we also got new debt, and then we paid it out to the previous owners in terms of buying it. A bit more on cash flow. I suppose the main area to focus on here is something we mentioned at the time of the acquisition, which is the ongoing capital requirements of both Kounrad and Sasa are not too burdensome, really. This year and next year, we see that we're spending about $11 million on the tailings dam facility, which will last us then for another 7 or 8 years. So beyond 2018, the sustaining capital required both for Sasa and Kounrad is of the magnitude of about $10 or $11 million combined per annum. $2 million at Kounrad and something like $8 or $9 million at Sasa. And that's important when you look at the cash flows from the business and you see what demands are on the free cash flow, because our dividend policy, which we'll talk about shortly, depends on the free cash flow less the capital requirements, and they aren't too burdensome, as you can see. Chart we've used several times for Kounrad. We've now included in it the copper equivalent tons for Sasa for 2 months of operation in 2017. This shows consistency, how we've developed Kounrad into a fully developed and sustainable cash flowing business. And now, as we reach the next phase of development of CAML, what we're looking at in 2017 and 2018 and beyond is obviously the introduction of Sasa into those kind of numbers. But again, as Nick mentioned before, when we first started out in 2012, copper was at $8,000 per tonne. Last year, we were looking at, in 2016 that is, just shy of $5,000 per tonne, but still generating good revenues and good EBITDAs. Now that copper has effectively turned the corner in many ways, this year we achieved $6,107 per tonne. So a $1,000 per tonne increase, and that's obviously impacted on far stronger revenues and EBITDAs for the group. And the last point to mention, which I'll touch on again, is the amount of money we've paid back over the period of that 5 years and 8 months through Kounrad, effectively, is nearly $130 million back in dividends and healthy margins throughout that period of time. Okay, the cost base. As I said before, we can't really influence the price that we sell the metals at, but what we can do is control our cost base. Historically, we've always measured C1 cash costs of copper at Kounrad, and I'll touch on that one first of all on this slide, which is it has increased from 45 cents up to 52 cents, a 16% increase. About 5 cents of that is because we've now moved over to the Western dumps and we've got a number of increase in electricity consumption. The percentage increase in electricity usage was about 8%. Small increase in the price of that electricity, and also we employ more people because we're covering a larger footprint, both the plant at the east and also the people to manage the facilities out to the west. So that's gone up slightly, 52 from 45. That's measured in exactly the same way we've always historically measured it. Where it gets a little bit more complicated now that we have zinc and lead into the equation is how we measure our C1 cost of zinc moving forward. The methodology we've adopted is what is defined by Wood Mac effectively. It's a pro rata method. And what you have to do is you have to effectively take the net smelter revenue for both your zinc and your lead, and then you work out what is the percentage, and you apply that percentage to the cost base, then you apply it to the payable ton. So in this case, for 2017, we've done it on a full year basis, and the zinc element was about 41% on a net smelter revenue basis. So we applied 41% of that cost base to the paid tons in zinc, and you come out with 44 cents per pound. Not a lot of zinc manufacturers actually report a C1 cash cost, but we've decided that we will report this We'll measure it consistently along that basis, and that will be an indicator for shareholders how we're managing the cost base on a unit basis. So it went from 45 up to 44 on zinc C1 cash cost. The other measure which we're going to adopt as a company is what we call a camel copper equivalent C1 cash cost. Again, what you're effectively doing there is converting everything into copper equivalent at a copper price. We use $6,100 for this. We then throw all of that into get a copper equivalent production, which was around about 34,000 tons of copper effectively for the year, and apply the cost base to that, and the number we came out with is 76 cents per pound. Still in the lowest quartile, but as you can see, from when we just had Kounrad, it's effectively gone from 52 to 76, but still in the lowest quartile, and that's measuring it on a copper equivalent basis. And we think we think they're good measures. We think that's what we'll continue to measure to give some consistency to investors to measure our performance on a unit cost basis. Just a little bit more on the Kounrad one, a diagram there that shows how that's broken down, 52 cents per pound. You can see actually producing the physical cathode copper that comes out of the plant's about 37 cents per pound. You then add on the local GNA of 6 cents per pound. Realisation, which is basically sales and distribution to get it to the market, is another 9 cents per pound. Won't labour the point on that, but just to suffice to say, you can see where Kounrad is on the cost curve. This is a WoodMac cost curve, and you can see even on the equivalent copper equivalent basis with Sasa how low we are on the cost curve as well. Last but by no means least, on cost or cash cost, should I say, there's the same diagram for the Sasa zinc equivalent cash cost of 44 cents per pound. Processing, about 8 cents per pound. Mining, 15 cents per pound. Local G&A. And then realisation costs, the treatment charges at the smelters where the actual zinc concentrate and lead concentrate are actually refined. One other measure which we've looked at and which we will continue to report on is just looking at the cost base at Sasa. You can see there, these are the actual absolute costs in 2016 and 2017 for the mining, processing and G&A to give a local operating cost and run it through the units of ore that are actually mined through the underground mine. And you can see we're looking fairly consistently, have gone from $33.7 per tonne to now at $34 per tonne for 2017. That's on an annual basis as well, not the 2 months simply that we've owned the mine for. Last but by no means least, obviously on the financial numbers that we're talking about this morning, is shareholder value, dividends. Nick said we've announced the final dividend for 2017 of 10 pence, making 16 and a half pence for the year. And really, in some ways, drawing a line effectively under our policy that we've had since we started from IPO, which was a revenue-based policy, which we're now changing. So if you look at it going back on 6 years that we've been paying this dividend out, we've paid $129 million back to shareholders. The 16.5 pence is about a 6% increase on last year's full-year dividend, and it's about a 5% yield on the current share price, which has obviously improved quite significantly from when we announced the deal back in November, up to a price which is now about £3.20, £3.25. So both capital growth and also, you know, a strong dividend return. Moving forward for this year, just to remind everybody in the room that our dividend policy from now on will be to return to shareholders a target range of between 30% and 50% of the free cash flow, and that's defined in our eyes as the net cash generated from operating activities, less that capital expenditure that I talked about before. So that's why that becomes important for investors in terms of how much we may pay out on dividend. And last but by no means least, total shareholder return since IPO some almost 8 years ago now, 7.5 years, 25%, both in capital growth of the share price, we listed at 96 pence, and the amount that we've paid back in dividends over that period of time. So I'll just pause there, just to, those are the financial numbers for CAML for 2017. What I'll talk about now, and many of you have seen these slides several times before, two of the operations that we've got which have driven those numbers. I'll talk about Kounrad, then I'll hand over to Gavin, who'll touch on Sasa and the new acquisition. So, Kounrad fully developed effectively now. This is an overview of the site. There's the eastern dumps, there's the western dumps, there's the plant. The dotted lines here is the infrastructure we put in place in 2016 and finished off last year for the raffinate lines and also the PLS lines that ship raffinate and PLS effectively from the plant over to the western areas that we're now starting progressively more so to leach as opposed to the eastern dumps. We've effectively processed 80% of the copper we expected in the eastern dumps. So we've now got recoverable copper remaining of about 16,500 tonnes of copper, having leached 63,000 tonnes almost from these eastern dumps. Last year, in 2017, most of the copper came from the eastern dumps. In fact, 40% of the copper came from the west and about 60% from the eastern dumps. As we transition through this year and next year, that percentage will flip. So this year we're looking at about 65% from the west, and then following years it'll be eventually such that the eastern dumps are effectively run down to zero. Just a few factors on the two different dumps. Eastern dumps, it is different metallurgically. We get an average copper recovery in the eastern dumps of 25 to 50%. Dump height's about 20 metres and average leach time's 8 to 9 months of that magnitude. Whereas in the west, the dump height's effectively twice as high, average leach time is a lot longer, 20 months, and the recovery is slightly less, 35 to 42%. But one thing we were very satisfied with last year, because it was the first time we'd leached in the western area, was it was in line with what we planned for, in line with the recoveries, and also in terms of the timing, slightly ahead on the recovery, which I'll come to in a minute. But overall, it was a successful first year of leaching in the western dumps. And you can see the copper remaining in the western dumps is almost 200,000 tonnes. If you take what we call the ILA, which is the initial leach area, that's these two areas here, parts of dump 16 and dump 22, we actually recovered 5,500 tonnes of copper from that area. There's still another 31,000 tonnes of recoverable copper in that area, and then there's the rest of the western dumps here. So about 200,000 tonnes, and at the kind of production guidance we've given for this year, which will remain the same to the end of the life of mine effectively, we're looking at about 15 years plus life of mine remaining with the western dumps. Production update, you can see the seasonality of the business from Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. It goes up and down, making more copper effectively in the Q2 and Q3, the summer months. But through marginal improvements over the course of the life of the mine, we've effectively improved each of those quarters. As Nick mentioned before, Q1 of this year was extremely cold. We had a week where it was minus 38 degrees average over the period of that week. We did fall back between Q1 the previous year of about 300 tonnes, but it's nothing that is worrying to the management team. We will make up that copper through the course of the year, and we are on target still to hit our 13,000 to 14,000 tonnes guidance for this year in copper production. You can see the total copper production to the end of 2017 is 68,000. That's now over 71,000 tonnes of copper to the end of Q1 2018. And just as I mentioned there, the outlook, 13,000 to 14,000 tonnes. 65% of that will now come from the west, and an increasing percentage from the west as we move on. Just a little bit of operational overview, just to show how we've managed the site effectively. Production has increased over the course of the years to now where we find ourselves, record year last year, 14,103 tonnes. And what we've done effectively, we've increased the flow rates. You can see there it's increased year on year on year. As the grade has slightly declined. We believe now we're more or less at steady state in some ways, getting to 1,000 cubic metres per hour on PLS, and grades anywhere between just shy of 2 up to 2.5 grams per litre. You see the plant availability is high and always has been high. That's in the 5 years, 8 months we've been operating that plant. It's never fallen below just 96.9% in the first year was the lowest we've had, which is tremendous, I suppose, you know, recognition of the way the guys managed the plant and the way it was designed by Begrim. The other thing is that's increased over the course of the years is the irrigation area, the amount of area that's under irrigation at any one time. So we're managing those leaves effectively, increasing the flow rates as the grade comes down and increasing the area under leach. And the last thing to say is the purity of the copper. 99.997 is the lowest we've ever hit. So it's extremely pure copper that we produce from the site. This slide here, a little bit more complicated, but similar message really. And what it's saying is, I've just mentioned about the area under leach going from 35.9 to 39.2, it's about a 10% increase. Actually, as you go to the west, the volume, the quantity of material under leach is significantly more. In fact, it's increased there by about 40%, I think, 40, 50% in terms of material that's under leach, because the western dumps are higher, as I said before, at about 40 metres. And that's how we manage it. So as the grade within the ore body itself, it's more or less stabilised here as we go out to the west. But as that has declined, we've increased the actual volume of material under leach accordingly to actually maintain an increase in the actual through the output of copper. I won't labour this slide, it's just a diagrammatic slide of the eastern dumps showing, as I said before, we think we've got about 16,000 tonnes left to recover in that area. Although this is not an exact science, as I'm sure you've heard Nick mention several times, it's not an, it shouldn't be an exact number. It is an exact number on there, but it isn't an exact number in many ways. We've got about that magnitude that we believe on our planning purposes to actually recover. We'll probably still be leaching and doing ILS systems to actually increase the tenor of the raffinate as it goes on to the western dumps for many, many years hence. And then the western dumps, where we started in April 2017, we've been leaching there now for 8 months. It has been successful. Here's the leach curve, or recovery curve that I mentioned before. Slightly ahead of that. I wouldn't read too much into that. I think it's more or less in line with the design and the plan. We're still looking at a 20-month leach curve and the kind of recoveries that I said before, 35 to 42% to come off these particular dumps. And we haven't really experienced any increase in acid consumption as we move to the west as well. We had a little bit more on dump two in the east. But overall, you know, the recoveries and everything that we planned for is in line with what we're estimating through the guys. So on that point, that's Kounrad. That's been the company maker for the last 5 years. That's what's generated the healthy margins. That's what's generated the cash that's given the company a very good platform to move forward into its next phase of growth. And at that point, I'll hand over to Gavin to touch on where we've got to with integrating the Sasa mine.
Thanks, Nigel. So how's the new kid at school doing? look, we've owned Sasa for almost 5 months now, and I have to say we're very pleased with the contribution it's made to the business. One of the things that really attracted us to the asset in the first place was the consistency of operation and production, and I think this table on the right-hand side shows that. If we just look at recoveries that we've achieved, even just in the few months we've owned it, and in 2017 versus 2014, as well as the grades concentrate that are being produced, and you can see that consistency of production that's really driving through and driving the results that the contribution that SAS has made to the results. 2017 was exactly in line with what we expected, 21,500 tonnes of zinc produced, just under 30,000 tonnes of lead. As Nigel said, we effectively account from the 1st of November for sales from Sasa and pay of bill sales, which is in effect including all of the deductions the smelters make, so it's difficult to tie those numbers up with these down here. But we sold just under 3,000 tonnes of zinc and about 4,500 tonnes of lead in that period from 1st of November. So what that means is those are pretty much in line with what we expected, as I said, and first quarter production outlook, 5,500 tonnes of zinc produced in quarter one by us and just over 7,000 tonnes of lead, which gives us, right bang on target for the annual guidance that we're providing, 21 to 23,000 tonnes of zinc and 28 to 30,000 tonnes of lead. A little bit more detail on those production statistics, and again, just what jumps out at us is just the consistency of all throughput through the plant, grade on a monthly basis. Now, clearly, that's going to fluctuate as well on any mine. We are, in fact, putting in some much more stringent grade control procedures at the mine so that we can reconcile grade to production on site much better than it has been done in the past. And then plant availability, again, nicely up in the high 90s here. So everything pretty much as expected. We have done some work on the plant just to have a look at areas that we can improve there. We're not just taking everything at face value. We're doing full reviews of both mining performance and plant performance to see whether there are any advantages we can gain in future from there. But again, as I said earlier, production statistics for 2017 very much in line with the last sort of 8 years in terms of lead production, zinc production, and more throughput through the plant. Clearly, Sasa is fundamental now to the future of CAML, and there is some money being spent there. We, for those of you who don't know the asset, this is a sort of new diagram we've dug out that sort of, I guess, improves on what we had before. But it illustrates quite nicely the three ore bodies that we know are on site. Now, the main ore body we're mining right now is called Sfinjareka, and that's where all historical production has come from. We mine at three blocks at any one time, and there are multiple stopes at each of these blocks. And around 60 to 70% of ore is transported. It's not clear abundantly clear on this diagram, but there's a main haulage drive, a main 30 level, that goes to a shaft at Glamorica. And about 60 to 70% of the ore comes out there, the rest of it out of a decline and trucked down to the crusher. So, and what we're doing to sort of extend into the future is we are developing the decline further down into these lower levels from the 830 level down to the 750 level. And we've also upgraded some of the fleet as well just to sort of support. And I think that was just normal kind of depreciation and taking out of old equipment. So we haven't actually added to the fleet yet. There's clearly potentially an opportunity there as well. So in terms of what Sphinger Reka gives us in the reserve is around 14 years of exploitation. If we extend the ore body, which is contiguous at depth, we can use some of the inferred resources and put those into the mine life, plus around half of the inferred of the Glamorica ore body, which gives us a 20-year mine life. Now, we aim to replenish reserves as we go along. So there are drilling campaigns currently ongoing at Sphinger Reka, which hopefully will also add to the tons, not only just make up for depletion. As I said, there's further upside here at Glamorica. There's about a 7 million tonne inferred resource there. About 3 million tonne of that is currently in the mine plan. And the drilling program is ongoing there. And then Kozhereka is completely undrilled, but the haulage drive actually goes right through it, and actually it had been mined in the past. So a formal drilling program will hopefully prove up a lot more resource there as well. So there is significant upside at Sasa. The main activity actually in the last year, the main area where we're spending a lot of capital is this new tailings facility. We call it TSF4. You can see the TSF 3.2 dam wall over here and the toe of the TSF4 down here. These pipes are all for the drainage carpet that is actually now completed and it's gone in. So the total budget for that was around $10.9 million. We expect to start using that in 2018. And it will give us tailings capacity through to 2026. So going to that CapEx slide Nigel showed you earlier on the sustaining side, around 9 to 10 million at Sasa on a steady state, and then every 6-7 years or so, we have to put a new tailings facility in. But again, there are areas that we could potentially improve through slightly different mining methods, different tailings construction and tailings location. So it's quite nice that we've got these areas of upside there. Onto the CSR. Now, I think Nick mentioned it is a fundamental part of our business, and we're very pleased to announce that we continue with a LTI free 2017 at Kounrad. We're now at over 2 million hours of LTI operations in Kazakhstan, which is fantastic given that we effectively set everything up from a standing start there. And with a lot of buy-in from the staff, which is absolutely fantastic. What we've done is we've had a lot of health and safety checks from government officials. We've passed all of those with flying colours. And I think that's again just the culture we have. We give ownership to people on the ground. We have mostly local staff operating in Kazakhstan and Sasa for the matter. We back this, as I said, a lot of focus on training and having local buy-in to all of these programs. On the social side, we've committed to over $1.5 million of funding and investment in that over since we started the operation, primarily aiming at health and educational and charities in the Kounrad and Balkhash area. So all, again, benefiting immediately the local community. On the environmental side, we have a huge program of groundwater monitoring, monitoring wells that are continuously monitored for any stray elements going through there, now being supplemented by bedrock drilling programs as well. And again, all checked by the authorities over 2017 were passed quite easily. Similarly, at Sasa, we had a LTI free 2017, which we can't take full credit for. Clearly, the previous owners had instituted some safety plans there. We are looking to adopt a lot of those plans and improve them where we can. The One of the things Nick Shirley is doing, he's our CSR director, he spends probably a little more than half of his time out at FASA now while we spend integration. Because we think that the whole health and safety and CSR thing really drives the culture and will ultimately lead to improved production, or at least, you know, keeping that steady state production, as we said. So, you know, while these numbers here, 2,525 task observations, I think all that really means is formalizing each person's work environment to assessing, identifying risks and mitigating and managing them, and ultimately, and hopefully not reporting any transgressions to that policy. So it is extensive, and it is so far working pretty well in 2017. On the environmental side, SASA is actually the only mine in Macedonia to have what we call an A-integrated IPPC permit, which is a bit of a mouthful, but what that means is that the whole mine falls under one permit. There are actually all separate permits that drive into there, but we have one permit that governs the whole thing. Now, the only amendments we're talking about here are to take into account the operation of TSF4, which I described earlier, and there are some settling ponds that we're going to put in on the 830 level to manage effluent out of the mine. There's a bunch of other sort of standard studies going on. We, you know, biodiversity, water management, air quality management, you know, what we mean by that is dust coming off the tailings facilities and going down the valley, which we're managing. And then on the social side, again, look, the town of Kamenica is pretty much dependent on the mine. It's a town of 7,000 people. We sponsor the local football teams, both male and female. We've got, I think, some sponsorship to a basketball team, but most importantly, we actually support the local community in terms of charities. We look after, we run an event every year for disabled kids in the region, that kind of thing. So, and in fact, since we've taken ownership, we're bolstering that by, we've hired a new community relations officer who has a surgery, I guess, once a week, if you want to call it that, down in town. So, really trying to integrate the whole mine a little bit, even more into the community. And I think the community does appreciate that. They do know that their livelihoods all depend on the safe and continued operation of the mine. So on to SHUAC, which is the little exploration project we've got up in near Stepnogorsk in the northern part of Kazakhstan. 2017 was the first year that we managed to put a full exploration program into place. We drilled around 22,000 meters, mainly what we call CHT drilling, which is a Soviet or Russian version of RAB or air core drilling, where we use water to transport the chips. So we can't use that for resource calculations, but it is very good, quick and easy exploration method. It drills down to refusal, so we get maybe, you know, half a meter into bedrock. We get a good view of what the underlying mineralization, both in terms of extent and we get grades. We're using a handheld XRF effectively to get the grades off of that, which we then use standards and diamond drilling to calibrate. So we got a fairly good handle on what we're getting out of there. And then that was supplemented by about 5,000 meters of diamond drilling. Look, the seasonal nature of mining and exploration in Kazakhstan means there's a massive backlog up in the labs come autumn. So we've had to wait till about February to get all the results out, which is well received, and the guys have been plotting and going frantically, you know, trying to interpret the results and then also design the 2018 program. But what we have come out, and I'll show you some of the results in a minute, is up in the north, what we call Mongol 1 and 2, we've hit some fairly interesting sulfide intercepts, which look like they're part of a quartz tourmaline breccia related to a porphyry. And down in the south, and those of you who attended site last year will remember this big flat pan area here. And we stopped up on a little ridge. We were very excited about this area because the geologists, you know, kept hounding me and telling me they needed to drill it. And this red patch that we've identified is a big oxide deposit, which was first prize for us. We were looking at an oxide target initially. Let's say oxide deposit, probably an oxide target now that we've delineated. It's about 1.5 kilometers in extent. It looks like from section to section it is continuous, so the 2018 program is really going to start focusing down here because our primary objective is really the sulfide. So I think the oxide, the sulfide is probably a secondary for us. And we look to commence that program probably May, June this year. Boots on the ground in early May, drill will arrive June, July. So these are some of the intercepts I'll talk about. Now, look, you've got to look at these things in the context of Kazakhstan, which is a generally lower-grade environment than you'd find in places like Chile, Peru, and certainly Central Africa. So, you know, when we look at the sulfide deposits I mentioned earlier, this Mongol Five area is the area around the old open pit that we saw. Kind of decent grades. Intercepts are, you know, reasonably exciting. But what's more exciting are the things that we're seeing down here at Mongol 1 and 2, which are slightly higher grade in the sulfides. If you are going to go into that, you need a sort of earlier payback. So early days yet on that. And then on the oxide side of the equation, Kizil Sor is the area I was talking about earlier. We're seeing some decent length intercepts at the sort of 0.3 to 0.5% range, which for an oxide deposit exploited by SXEW in Kazakhstan, as we know very well, is very doable. So 2018, we've got high hopes for. We're going to be extending the program at Kizil Sor and then also retesting some of the stuff around Mongol 1 and 2 primarily. So I'll hand back to Nick.
Right, thank you. You'll see that operationally we have two low-cost operations, and I think that is the most important message you want to get across, that low operating costs, and in fact the Sasa mine is a low capex commitment going forward. It's a fully developed underground mine, levels in place, shafts in place, permits in place. And we'll be hosting sometime this year a visit to the mine for a number of analysts, and you'll be able to see the extent of operations there. We're now exposed to three base metals, copper, lead, and zinc, arguably the most attractive industrial metals going forward. They've all got good fundamentals. You'll see positive and minuses. Nigel ran through some of the arguments for and against these metals, but we believe they are good industrial. They have good industrial uses, and they have very strong fundamentals going forward. The cash flow that we generate gives us a company that is able to pay good class-leading dividends, and we have every intention to maintain that philosophy. Whilst we have gone from a net cash position on our balance sheet when we just owned Kounrad, we now run with, what, at the end of last year, a net debt of about $139 million. The cash flow that these operations are throwing off will see us pay that down fairly rapidly. And we will be, and we are, looking this year at how we deal with that debt, which is now contained within an obligation in Sasa, and the new debt of $120 million, which is against Kounrad. There may be ways and means of consolidating and making everything a bit simpler to manage. Sasa, as Gavin ran through, it's stable. There is work to be done on management, on getting it more to reflect our corporate philosophy, but we're getting there. And part of that process is that, and we announced today, that Nigel, who's been CFO since listing in 2010, steps up on Monday to take over the CEO role, and obviously that leaves a vacancy, and Gavin has offered to step in to take the role of CFO from Monday as well. So now I will remain as chairman. Nigel will be CEO, looking after operations, Kounrad and Sasa. Gavin will take on the role of CFO and business development. But I think, you know, what we have got is a good really strong medium-sized operation now. Our market cap is about $800 million or thereabouts. And Nigel and I were reminiscing the other day when we listed, and some of you in the room were around when we listed in 2010. We got down to very small amounts of money. We now have a big business throwing off over $200 million in gross revenue next year, and with class-leading EBITDA margins, I would argue. So that gives us a lot of opportunity to look at other things going forward, and certainly having put away this Sasa deal doesn't mean to say that we're going to stop looking at other opportunities. I think the priority is to get Sasa operating in the manner in which we will feel comfortable with. But then with the team changes, and we've also taken on, it's a senior role, but we have a group metallurgist has now started to work with Howard, and he'll be looking at a number of those issues which Gavin raised in terms of plant performance and changes we'll be doing at Sasa and looking at Kunrad as well. So we have a group metallurgist who's joined us just in the last week, and we'll be looking at other appointments as we go along. So I can leave you with the 2018 production guidance. We're very much on track for that, and hitting those numbers, we'll see more accretion, more cash flow, and so as the new dividend kicks in, which we've said will be between 30 and 50% of the free cash flow of the company, we have very much the opportunity, as long as the metal prices hold up, of at least maintaining the current dividend yields that we've been seeing over the last year of 5% or more. And so, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. There is time now for some questions. Anybody in the room? And if we deal with anybody in the room first, and then we'll come to the telephone to see if there are any questions on the phone. But thank you very much indeed. Any questions?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star.
One question here, Paul.
Is there cemented backfill at Sasa at the moment?
There isn't. Currently, it's a sort of sub-level caving system that's operated. But as I think Gavin mentioned, as we go below the 830 level down to 750, there is thoughts about turning into a cut and fill method of stoping. There is a fill plant on site, which has been decommissioned, but it wouldn't take much to recommission it. So we are starting the process of looking at putting back cemented backfill into the underground operations as and when we implement stoping below 830. Okay, on the phone.
Okay, we don't have questions on the phone. Just a reminder, it's star one if you'd like to ask a question. We actually have one coming through the line of Michael Stoner from Berenberg. Michael, you can go ahead.
Morning. Gavin, you mentioned at Sasa you're having a big look at the grade control process. Could that potentially deliver less dilution and better grades to the mill?
I think that's the intention, Michael. I think what we found is that, you know, this mine has been operated since the 60s on and off, and most of the people there have got a long experience of it, and they're effectively still eyeballing muck piles on the ground and deciding on that basis whether or not they go to the plant or stay in the stope. Very simply, just sampling muck piles, sampling faces, sampling development drives is certainly going to improve the grade control. And we do see on a intraday basis and an intra-week basis, we do see some variabilities against budget. But we just like to tighten up on that, and ultimately we do hope that it will lead to less dilution. But the mining method is partly responsible for that dilution, so it's not going to be a panacea. But as Nick was saying, if we look at a less dilutive mining method, that might help more on that front, really.
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah. I mean, inherently, a sub-level caving system does have higher levels of dilution than one might see in a more precise cut-and-fill scenario. But nonetheless, I think the dilution is probably within industry standards, but I think there is areas, as Gavin said, where we can tighten up. And I think that's about information flow and how quickly sample assay information comes back to people on the ground making a decision as to whether it's a muck a foot or not, and send it to the waste or send it to the ore pass.
Okay, understood. So kind of incremental changes rather than kind of anything massive.
I think, Michael. It won't be anything. There'll be no quantum changes, but slow and hopefully improving grades.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Another one from me, if I may, on the cost inflation, Nigel, that you were talking about. It doesn't sound like it's kind of getting out of hand, but do you see opportunities for kind of cost cutting or any measures to counter any of that inflation, or at least cover up a little bit of it?
Yeah, I don't at this stage see any opportunities for cost cutting. Certainly, if we deal with Kunrad, first of all, we built that from scratch, so we know how that operates, and we like to think it's run efficiently. At Sasa, there may be areas, but I don't see any at the moment, Michael. On the inflation side, it's just our experience. One thing we did early doors, really, was to get hold of the procurement aspects of the business and therefore reviewed all the contracts in place. So there's a kind of swings and roundabouts on this. We are seeing, as we go to renegotiate contracts, there's a slight increase more than the headline inflation numbers in Macedonia I mentioned there, which is, what, 1.4%. So anything 5, 10% possible increase in some of those things. But against that, we are finding some efficiency savings as well, because some of these contracts had not been tendered for many years, actually, as it turns out. Things like Atlas Copco on the maintenance side of the equipment, as an example. And in purely going through that process of getting additional tenders and putting a bit of competitive tension into the market, we found we're making some efficiency savings. So I just raised it that, you know, as across a lot of mining businesses across the world, there are some inflationary impacts. But it's nothing that's getting out of hand, Michael, that's fair to say.
Okay, thank you. And final one, you mentioned you're accelerating debt repayments on cash sweeps. Have those cash sweeps mandated by the debt providers, or is there an element of it being at your option?
No, it is within the bank agreement, the debt agreements. It's effectively 33% at Kounrad and 25% on the Sasa debt. But as Nick alluded to, we are looking at having negotiations with some of the banks to see either whether we can mitigate some of those cash sweeps, or whether whether indeed we change some of the debt arrangements to make them easier to manage, really. I mean, the debt instruments themselves, the interest rates on them are not punitive in any shape or form. It's more the management of them and the way they've been structured with the group structure at Sasa, for example. So we're looking at that to see if we can mitigate that. And if we, in discussion with them, can alleviate some of the cash sweeps, we do that. But it's not something that gives us cause for concern, because it's just an acceleration of repaying the debt off, which is something we intend to do anyway.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Any more questions on the phone?
Yes, we have one for the question from Charles Gibson from Edison. Charles, you can go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Many thanks. Nick, I think it was you who was talking about the rapid pay down of debt there, certainly at a net level and presumably at a gross level as well, as per Nigel's answer to Michael just then. I wonder if I could ask you, though, in the longer term, once debt net or gross has been paid down, you will be in a position where you'll start building up cash. And I wonder what cash levels you're happy to carry on your balance sheet, for how long, and how that positions you in terms of the market and in terms of your peers. What I'm really getting at is, if you were to ask Mark Bristow, he would say, look, we want to hold $500 million, and the reason we want that is because if we make an acquisition, it would be $1 billion, and that would be half debt and half equity. Do you have a similar sort of strategy in mind?
There's a number of elements to that question, isn't there?
It's a
philosophical question. I mean, I think we've shown that we are not afraid to pay out a dividend, which we've done since, as you know, 2012, and the $129 million that we paid back to date, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't sound an awful lot, but it is actually more than twice the money we raised at IPO in 2010. So we have set out very much an intent and, you know, something we called fiscal discipline way back in 2012, which showed that we didn't have anything better to do with our money. We would pay it back to shareholders. Well, then there's an argument to say, well, if we'd have kept the money, we wouldn't have had to borrow or raise extra money for this acquisition. But we used our shares as part consideration, and we have a strong stock price, one, we run a good business, but two, we pay dividends, which people invest in our stock for the dividend and the growth. So it's a double-edged sword, really. We have a good, strong stock price because we pay a dividend, and we can use that stock as sort of paper equity, as it were, you know, without having to come to the markets to raise new equity. So if we kept the money, would we have been in a better position? I don't think we would, actually. I think the way we are at the moment, with the level of debt, which is not too onerous, as Nigel said, net debt to EBITDA is well less than 2, which is the sort of benchmark for people saying, well, that you're getting too high. And we don't keep too much money in the company, but enough to service our ongoing 3-month costs, enough to service our debt repayments, enough to service CapEx, and still pay dividends. So I think, I think the current model we have Charles, is about where we will stay for the foreseeable future, paying dividends, taking on debt which is affordable, and not building up too much of a cash pile just for the sake of building up cash.
Okay, thank you.
And does that sort of answer the question?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
There are no further questions coming through on the phone.
Okay, thank you on the phone, and thank you in the room. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your handsets. House, please stay connected.